verse 28. God's just made humans. And he says to them in verse 28, God blessed them and said to them, be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish in the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground. Then God said, I give you every seed-bearing plant on the face of the whole earth and every tree that has fruit with seed in it. They will be yours for food. And to all the beasts of the earth and all the birds in the sky and all the creatures that move along the ground, everything that has the breath of life in it, I give every green plant for food. And it was so. God saw all that he had made, and it was very good. And there was evening, and there was morning, the sixth day. Andy.
Thanks, Matt, very much indeed. Let me just say that next week at 4:30 in the afternoon on Sunday, we're going to have a question panel. We've already had a few questions coming in. Should have put the number on here, but I'll do that at the end. So if you've got any questions, there'll be a number to text, or you can email and pop those questions in. But I've got a panel of four people, very distinguished people, ready to answer your questions next Sunday afternoon. So do come along a little bit early at 4:30. And then John Barrett's going to preach to us later on that evening. Well, look, a few months ago, three friends from Knighton went walking in the Lake District. And you probably don't recognise them from that distance. But I didn't recognise anybody from that distance. But on the left there is Josh Radford, and Andy Atkins is on the right, and Chris Trafford took the picture. And they started their walk thinking, oh, you know, black crowds, it's probably going to rain. But they pressed on into the cold mist, and finally the fog lifted and they caught sight of this wonderful view. They were looking down on the clouds. It was absolutely beautiful, so beautiful that they started taking their clothes off at one point. It was too hot. Let me just ask you, though, which would have your vote? What would you rather have? Okay, here's a choice. I'm going to actually ask you to vote on this. Do you want this? This is a little bit later on their walk. Okay, beautiful Lake District. Or do you want this? City, bustle, noise, architecture. This or this? Hands up if you want this. And hands up if you want this. Yeah, I thought so. Hands up if you want this, not them in particular, but just not very many people. Or hands up if you want this. This and this. Yeah, okay. Well, it's a no-brainer, really, isn't it? And yet I've got some really bad news for you tonight. Lots of groups in our society would agree with you completely. Environmentalists, anti-capitalists, anarchists see kind of the growth in the human population and the rise of human civilization as one of the greatest dangers on the planet. They want to turn the clock back and get back to that kind of natural world that we all like. And this is a little bit uncomfortable, I'm afraid, but the Bible doesn't agree. The Bible sees it the other way around. Genesis 1 sees that population and development of human civilization are the very reason that God created this world. See, the creation's only the beginning. And if you know the Bible well, you'll know it starts with a garden and it ends with a city. It moves from just a couple of human beings to a great multitude, Revelation tells us, that nobody could count. Now, I know that's causing a little bit of trouble for some of you, so just park that for the moment and we'll come back to it later on. As we've looked at Genesis 1 over the past few weeks, we've answered some pretty fundamental questions. Who am I? Why am I here? Do I matter? Last week, we saw that mankind was created in the image of God. We humans are to reflect God's character. Matt told us we're to be creative, spiritual, moral, communal beings. But that still leaves a question. What are we meant to be doing? What am I here for? What is the purpose of my life? Well, the answer is going to come in the passage that Matt read to us. So why don't we just pause and pray and ask God to help us. Father, we're so grateful that you give us answers to these really big questions, that we're not left alone in the dark wondering. We pray that tonight, by your Spirit, you would guide us and lead us into truth, that we'd understand more of you, more of ourselves, and more of the world around us, and how we fit into that, we pray. Please, Spirit, come and do that. Amen. Well, have a look at verse 26. Then God said, "Let us make mankind in our image, in our likeness, so that they may rule over the fish and the sea and the birds of the sky, over the livestock and over the wild animals and all the creatures that move along the ground." Part of being made in God's image is that we are to, can you see it there, rule over this world. Now, imagine that I have a country of my own. Let's call it Andyland. I haven't designed a flag yet. I've been thinking about it a little bit, but I've got no firm idea of it. I'm the king of Andyland, and I think to myself that the people of Great Britain need to know what the king of Andyland thinks, what he's like. But of course, I can't go to Great Britain. I'm far too important to do that. So what do? Well, I send someone to be my ambassador to the UK. What is the ambassador's job? Well, it's to go, if you like, and be me in another land to reflect my values and my standards. Well, that is what God has done. He's created us, male and female, in his image so that we can represent him, be his ambassadors in this world. See, the image of God is not what we look like, you might be relieved to know. It's what we do. It's a job title. We rule God's creation for him. We are to represent God, his interests, his values here on earth. Now, I just want you to pause for a moment and think about that. I don't know whether you were here last week. Talking to some of you, you were shocked, as Matt faithfully taught us, what it looks like to be created in the image of God and what the implications of that are. How it affects our view of the unborn or the elderly or sex. How it affects our view of others or our mouths or the church. But can you see why you were shocked? See, our calling as men and women is very high. We are to be, we're followers of Jesus, ambassadors for the living God. And so we shouldn't expect his values to be the same as those around us. And at times, we're going to come into painful conflict with that. A few years ago, the U.S. ambassador to Libya, J. Christopher Stevens, was killed brutally. Why? Because those who did it didn't like a film made in the US that they said insulted the Prophet Muhammad. Stevens represented America, President Obama. They didn't like Obama, and so they took it out on his ambassador. In the same way, it is not going to be easy to live as God's ambassadors in this world. It will be hard. You will come up against the values of this world when they conflict with the values of your king. Are you ready for that? And God goes on. And what he does is he fleshes out what it means to be made in his image. Look at verse 28. God blessed them, the man and the woman, and said to them, "Be fruitful and increase in number. Fill the earth and subdue it. Rule over the fish and the sea and the birds in the sky and over every living creature that moves on the ground." Now, look, what I want to do with you tonight, because I haven't got any kind of points, but I want to run a little bit of a riff, okay? a little bit of a riff on just two kind of concepts, two words that come up in our passage. God commands the humans made in his image to do two things. The first is this: to fill the earth, to be fruitful. They're to multiply, to fill the kind of the space that God has created for them, right? And then secondly, they are to subdue it. They're to subdue the earth and to rule over it. To make use of the earth, if you like, in a caring way. Two key commands: fill and then subdue and rule. Now, look, at first reading, ruling and subduing might make you think that there was something kind of wrong with the world that God had created. It was a bit hostile. It needed to be tamed. You know, it's a little bit like we're kind of cowboys in the Wild West. You know, we have to kind of wrestle nature to the ground and subdue it and then stand on it and rule over it. Because it's wild and it's against us. Well, that's not what God means by the words rule and subdue. Rather, he's saying that human beings are to bring out the full potential of the creation that he's made. Human beings are to bring out the full potential of the creation that he's made. So subduing literally means to cultivate the earth. It's similar to that phrase in chapter 2, verse 15, where the man tends the garden. He cultivates it. That's what a gardener does, isn't it? I mean, the gardener, in a sense, directs the garden in the way that they want it to go. You know, I want plants over here. I want vegetables over there. I want a pond here. And the language of ruling, well, that is applied to the animals. The emphasis is on kind of domestication. You're putting the animals to his use, looking after them. There's no sense of exploiting, using oppressively. And the reason is that the same word, exactly the same word, is used in the rest of the Old Testament for a shepherd. Shepherding his sheep. Shepherds don't exploit their sheep. It's their livelihood. They look after them. Or a king, a good king, ruling over his people. Men and women created in the image of God are to develop the world, to bring out its full potential. And all we're doing is really carrying on the work of God. I wonder whether you remember what we looked at a few weeks ago. We saw that God created the world by forming it. Do you remember this? Forming it and then filling it. Well, human beings are to carry on that work. We fill it with more human beings. And we form it by bringing about human civilization. Our role's different to God. We're not doing that from nothing. But we are carrying on what God started. It's a very high calling. Think of it a bit like this. I don't know if you know this guy. This is Sir Tim Berners-Lee. He created the internet back in 1989. He came across the idea of hypertext, and as a result, the internet came into existence. But since then, a whole bunch of scientists and computer programmers and, frankly, nerds have started to develop the full potential of the internet. And you're enjoying that today. You know, the music you stream, the fitness programs that kind of connect with the internet, the news you get. It's all because they've taken Berners-Lee's idea and shaped and molded it in a thousand different ways. Well, it's the same here, isn't it? Human beings carry on the work of God, filling and forming the world. And the best way to see how that happens is to see how that command is worked out in the next few chapters. Take the idea of filling the world. The human beings, they move from being an original couple in chapter 2. They become a family in chapter 4. By the time we get to Genesis 11, we will get there, there are many nations. And all the way through, the author stops every now and again, and you'll find this a little bit disturbing. And he gives us a list of names, genealogies. He's simply making the point. Human beings are obeying the command. They're filling the earth. But you also see humans subduing and ruling over the world. So go to chapter 4 and you find Abel. Well, what's he doing? He's ruling over the animals. He's a shepherd. Cain, what's he doing? He's subduing the earth. He's growing crops. Cain then goes off and he builds a city. He was the first city builder in the Bible. And then as chapter 4 develops, we come across a guy with a great name of Jubal. And Jubal, verse 21, is the father of all who play stringed instruments and pipes. There you go. Jubal's your man, boys. Or there's Tubal Cain. That's what you want to call your kids, by the way. Tubal Cain. That's a great name for your next kid. Verse 22. He forges bronze and iron. Do you see what's happening? Human civilization is developing as human beings rule and subdue, as they build farms and cities, as they engage in art and music, as they produce technology. But Genesis 1 says, it's God who makes all of this possible. He doesn't simply tell man what to do, get on, do it. But he blesses them. And he provides for them, giving them, we're told, plants of food and everything he needs to carry out his purpose. Now, look, I'm telling you the good news, but in a few weeks' time, we're going to see the bad news. We're going to see that human beings have rebelled against the living God. And actually, that's frustrated their work of filling and ruling. So childbearing now for Eve becomes painful, as a number of women in this room will bear witness to. Barrenness and infertility enter into God's world. They weren't meant to be there. Subduing the earth becomes harder. We're told that Adam's going to have this running battle with the earth in order to produce the crops to live. But this rebellion doesn't set aside God's command that he gave to the man and the woman. Rather like last week, do you remember that Matt was talking about we're made in the image of God, and he had here a mirror, and then he turned the mirror around, and it was shattered. Well, a shattered mirror still reflects, doesn't it? Just not accurately. It's distorted. It's broken. Well, in the same way, this command to rule and to fill the world doesn't stop. It's just distorted. It's twisted. It's not what it was meant to be. Let me give you an example of that. We've just come to the end of actually quite an incredible month of anniversaries. I don't know if you're aware of this. January saw some devastating anniversaries. So the 16th of January marked the 70th anniversary of the detonation of the first atomic bomb in the Nevada desert. The Manhattan Project, as it was known, took some of the most advanced scientific knowledge of the age and used it to build the single most destructive weapon of all time. And a few months later, two of those bombs were exploded over Japan, killing, people estimate, between 129,000 and 246,000 people. Then on the 27th of January, we marked the 70th anniversary of the liberation of the Auschwitz-Birkenau Nazi death camps. Over 1.1 million people died in there, 90% of whom were Jewish. In all, it's been estimated that 11 million people died in the Nazi Holocaust. 6 million Jews, 5 million Russian Poles, Gypsies, homosexuals, Jehovah's Witnesses, other religious dissenters, exterminated. How could they do that? Well, the Nazis used technology and efficient transport to conduct mass murder on an industrialized basis. It goes on in hundreds of smaller ways today. Genocides continue to happen. new technologies destroy the environment. Rather than ruling over the world like a shepherd, human beings pillage and rape it for their own purposes. Some of you in this room are training in lots of different ways. As medics, you're entering a brave new world with the power of great good or great harm. And it's not altogether obvious. Whilst the Christian medic would never want to be involved in carrying out abortions, what about, did you see in the news this week, the creation of so-called three-parent babies? Where faulty genes that cause great suffering are removed and healthy genes from a third human being are inserted into the embryo. Tell me, is that good or evil? I don't know, to be honest. But we've got to think about that. Some of you are engineers. Perhaps you'll end up in the field of robotics, where there are going to be all sorts, I tell you, there are going to be massive questions, moral questions in the future. You'll be involved with that. I'm not saying any of this is easy, but I am saying that as Christians, we should be in the forefront of this. That's the point of Genesis 1. We were created to be those who discover and create and invent. All of these things flow from the fact that we're made in the image of God. And actually, this is desperately important because it helps us to correct the faulty thinking of evangelicalism over the last century. You know, we've somehow painted this picture, and I'm guilty of this, that evangelism is the only worthwhile cause. Nothing else really matters. Everything else in our lives should be a kind of a precursor to doing the work of evangelism. So if you want to be a doctor or nurse, that's great, but actually it's because we need you to witness. It doesn't really matter what you do. It's just an excuse to get you in a hospital. Or we've spun this lie that becoming a full-time Christian worker is better than being a dentist or a waste disposal expert. And the problem is that we think like that, that actually 95% of what we do with our lives is meaningless, pointless. Now instead, the New Testament says that work is good, provided we do it for God. We're told that our normal everyday lives are part of our worship. Work is valuable as we provide for the needs of others. Colossians 3, Paul tells slaves to work as to the Lord, working with your whole heart. Similar in the New Testament, we're told the family matters, it's valued, that stable marriages are important, that bringing up children is a hugely valuable thing in God's eyes. You need to hear that if you're a mother or a father. The time you're investing in your children is not wasted. And equally, we don't have to feel guilty about enjoying work or human culture. God created the world for us. We're to love all that is beautiful in it. And look, by the way, here, let me be very straight with you. Regarding technology, I was saying this the other morning, I am so grateful that I was not born in the 16th century when if you had a little bit of a headache, they'd stick one of these on your brain and suck out a little bit of blood and you're meant to feel better. I'm so thankful to God that I've been born in the age of antibiotics and anesthetics that if they ever have to cut off my leg, I'm not going to be in agony. I love the gadgets we have in this world. You know that. And actually, that's good. These are good things. Do you give God thanks for them? Thanks that you're not tonight living in an Amazonian rainforest, having to get up at the crack of dawn tomorrow because you are subsistence kind of farmers, and you have tomorrow to get enough food to eat. Aren't you grateful that you can walk into Sainsbury's and pick up a meal deal, and so give your life to other things? Oh, isn't that good? Have you thanked God for that? But look, the Bible doesn't leave it there. The Bible doesn't just stay with Genesis 1. The Bible actually takes it one stage further. See, when Jesus enters our world, he comes, as we were thinking last week, as the true image of God. Or if you like, this week, as the perfect ambassador of God. He comes to bring a whole new civilization that he's going to populate with his people living under his rule. And we're told that Jesus will one day bring the glorious city of God that you can read about at the end of the Bible. But the remarkable thing is perhaps not that, although that's incredible enough. The remarkable thing is that God enlists men and women to work with him. So if we're Christians tonight, then Jesus wants us to work with him for this new creation. And in many ways, the New Testament equivalent of the verses in Genesis 1 is the great commission that we find at the end of Matthew 28. There, Jesus commands his disciples to go out to all nations and make disciples. They're to teach them to obey everything that he has commanded. And I wonder whether you can hear the echoes of our passage in Genesis. See, we're to fill the earth, but this time we're to populate the nations by new birth. People who have been born again by the Spirit of God. And those people are to be taught to obey everything that Jesus has taught them. So here's the problem. And this is kind of the grand ending, okay? But I don't know, maybe as you've been listening to this, you think, hang on, there's a little bit of a problem there, Andy. Have you spotted that? See, on the one hand, you have, well, Christians who tend to revert to Genesis 1. Christians who love the first part of this talk. Yeah, let's get on with the work of creating and inventing. Let's develop, let's bring up families, let's live ordinary lives well, they say. And then you have other Christians who turn towards Matthew 28. No. What's important is the work of evangelism, discipleship. That's what matters. This world's going to pass away. Let's win people for the next. And do you see, the two tend to be at each other's throats. You hang around churches long enough, you'll hear this. But they don't need to be. Because actually the truth is, that as we work, as we fulfill what God commanded in creation, we have the opportunity to point people to the new creation. It's as you go about your life tomorrow, wherever God has placed you, that you can witness for him. It's as you bring up families, children, that we have opportunities to testify to the new heavens and the new earth. In other words, do both. Fulfill that creation calling of God in your life to fill the earth, to rule and subdue it. And fulfill the new creation calling of God in your life to help fill the nations with people who know Jesus Christ and who gladly live under his rule. Will you do that? And by the way, I tricked you at the beginning. It was a bit naughty, but I couldn't resist it. Remember the Lake District? See, the joke is we look at that and we think, oh, how beautiful, how natural. Oh, I love that. I just want to get back to nature. I hate all this kind of man-made stuff. Let's just get back to nature. Just walk in the hills as they were intended to be. See, the one thing I did do at university was ecology. Didn't do much else. I managed to avoid biochemistry. It was far too hard. Ecology was easy. So I did ecology. And what I discovered, didn't discover much, but what I did learn was actually landscapes like this, in particular this landscape, they're not natural at all. It's not natural. That should be full of woods. We've chopped all the woods down. We've imported sheep. They've eaten all the grass. They keep it in control. That is an entirely man-made environment. So it doesn't matter whether you're in the Lake District or in the city. It is all part of God's great commission for this world, to go and fill it and subdue it. So if you like that, it's okay. I think it's going to be in the new heavens and the new earth, as will the city for the other five of you. Look, we're going to pray shortly, but I want to just, Matt's going to help me in a moment. I just want to apply some of this. We talked about going to the nations and making disciples. Tim and Audrey Dixon and Stephen Rach Borden, with Alyssa, I think, as well, have gone to Romania. And they're there with our friends Benny and Joanna at the moment. And they sent back some information, just said there's some really great encouragements. Tense, he said. And today they've had a very full day. So it'd be great if we could remember them in prayer. On Tuesday the 10th of February, Peter Williams is going to be here, and he's talking about the God of the Old Testament, jealous, vindictive, and unforgiving. I don't know if you've seen Stephen Fry's comments in the media.